Today's show is brought to you by WarbyParker.com. Get a free 5-day home try-on at www.warbyparkertrial.com/polaropposites. 5 pairs, 5 days, 100% free. Warby Parker makes it easy. You choose 5 frames you'd like to try on, mail the frames back, choose your favorite pairs to have your prescription added, and order. Warby Parker makes your experience completely risk-free and free shipping all the way around. So again, visit warbyparkertrial.com/polaropposites to begin your free home try-on experience today. So all of that is linked in the description, and with that being said, let's get to the show.
I've always supported the death penalty. I don't even understand people that don't.
We have to bring back the death penalty. They have to pay the ultimate price.
Death penalty. Bring it forth.
What's up, everybody? It's me, Justin, back with another episode. So good to be back. I'm feeling a lot better. I know I've been, you know, kind of depressed the past couple of weeks, but I'm feeling better, as hopefully the rest of you guys are feeling better as well. So, new week, new episode with a new guest. We'll introduce her in a second. But how are you guys doing? It's been an interesting week for me. I'm still decompressing with everything that's been going on, but we're all trying to move through it and, you know, get through, I guess, life as a black person, I guess. If you guys are new to the show, after listening to this episode, if you enjoy what you hear, be sure to subscribe, be sure to follow me on Instagram, be sure to tell a friend to tell a friend. I love to see it, and I do appreciate all of the support from all of you guys that love the show. It means a lot to see y'all listening from all around the country. So keep listening and keep sharing with a friend. I love to see it. Yeah, that's basically all I have for this preamble, I guess. This week is a monumentous episode. I'm joined by my friend Doha. Hi, Doha.
Hi, I'm Doha.
So, Doha, this is a monumentous episode. I don't know if you know why.
I thought I did, but now I'm doubting.
The reason why this is a monumentous episode, since I began the podcast last March, I have never had a white woman on the podcast. Doha, you are the first one. How does it feel?
Yeah, it's interesting because growing up, before I really knew anything about race, I wouldn't have considered myself white. Like, I looked at the, you know, whenever you bubble in those things, I would look at those and I'm like, other? Because I'm Middle Eastern, and like, there was only like two other Mediterranean Arab descent people in my whole school. And I never really felt community with white people or in any sort of way, especially growing up in a Muslim family. You don't really think of yourself as white, but then,
right.
I mean, cut down to the chase, my race would be white.
I'm white. I'm a Caucasian because everything about me is different from an African American. I have naturally straight hair. My hair isn't nappy. It doesn't require weave. My nose is not giant as like African Americans.
That's interesting because in high school, whenever I noticed that there wasn't like an Arab like option for people on Scantrons, I was like, so what do Arab people consider themselves? And I was so shocked to see that they consider themselves white. Back then I was shocked. Like, now that I'm a learned man, like, I don't think about that anymore or think of it as shocking. But it is interesting because technically speaking, you are white.
Yeah, exactly.
Fun fact. But this week is an interesting episode. We'll get into some interesting stuff later on in the episode. But before we begin, let's get into Off My Chest.
Justin's got a gift.
It's off his chest.
You know he's got a gift.
It's off his chest.
Justin's got to get some fucking shit off his chest.
All right. So Off My Chest, of course, is a segment where we get to rant about things that are bothering us. So this week, I definitely have something. So, you know, with everybody posting stuff on social media, I saw somebody posted on their story companies that work with prison labor. And prison labor is a controversial thing because people think that that is wrong, that, you know, prisoners should not be working to help companies get rich, basically. So they provided a long list of companies. So some of the brands they included on their list included Charmin, the toilet paper brand, Olay products, Old Spice products, Gillette razors, Crest toothpaste, Slim Jims, Pam, Orville Redenbacher. So this is a lot of stuff. And I thought it was interesting because they were kind of posting it as a way for us to pick and choose what we do support and what we don't support. But I think that's kind of a slippery slope because no matter what you choose to support, there's going to be something inherently problematic about what you, I guess, use on a day-to-day basis. There's stuff that we use on a daily basis that's problematic and wrong, but you don't have any issue using that item, but all of these items you have an issue with. You know what I mean? Like, what is your take on that? Do you think that that list should be relevant because we're all hypocritical in a way?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I feel like when people post things like that, you're automatically inclined to be like, okay, I should not be supporting these groups. I think the bigger picture is that it just draws attention about where our money is going every day, like the money we don't think about, because everyone likes to think, of course I don't support things that would support racism, but really, where does our money go? You know, and it makes you more conscious, I think, about where your money goes. And it kind of, well, I would hope that it shows companies like, we're looking at you, you know, hopefully people get more aware of where their money goes. And it kind of goes back to the water thing. Like you mentioned, I got onto you about like plastic water bottles, but since then, like you kind of have to, you kind of take your battles as you can, you know, like you can't always do everything, but you can try to eliminate what you can. Say if people stop supporting those brands, they might end up supporting another brand that also ends up using prison labor. They just didn't make it on that list for whatever reason.
Right.
But also it doesn't hold the companies accountable at the end of the day, unless it's like a strong enough movement to where the company isn't using prison labor. Then at the end of the day, are you really doing much?
Right. Because my thing is that it's just hypocritical because, yes, prison labor is wrong. But Doha, do you believe in child labor?
No.
So we all use iPhones and everybody knows that iPhones are constructed and put together by like children in all these third world countries. So it's like, how can you say using all these products is wrong when we all have iPhones? If you care about the environment, you know?
So that kind of goes to my point of like, we stopped using straws because it became a trend, but like, what else are you doing in your life? So it's kind of like you can cut down what you can, but you can't judge someone else for not cutting down on something, if that makes sense. Like for the water bottle example, I think I criticized you for using water bottles when you can use a reusable bottle, but it's not like every aspect of my life is leaned toward being environmentally conscious. So just because you're not doing that and I am, doesn't make it more righteous, because there's other things in my life that I might be doing that you are, to be environmentally conscious.
Well, that's why I don't think people should criticize anybody. Like you can like tell your friend, hey, you know, you can, you know, save plastic bottles by using a water bottle, but I don't think anybody has the right to criticize anybody, because if you look at what you're doing in your personal life, there are things that you do that are problematic that you don't even realize are problematic, or some things that are problematic that you feel fine with using because nobody calls you out on it. You know what I mean? Like we all use iPhones, but you have an iPhone and I didn't say, well, you use an iPhone. What makes child labor any worse than harming the environment? You know?
Yeah, it's kind of, my friend brought up like an interesting word, like gatekeeping activism. It's kind of like, I'm doing it the right way. You should do it my way and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting.
And it's a good thing that you brought up activism because, you know, a lot of people were posting and have been continuing to post the George Floyd stuff, like how to help with Black Lives Matter, where to donate, how to continue keeping the movement alive. And that stuff is great. But I think it's kind of a Pandora's box, especially for allies, because, you know, everybody was posting about George Floyd, but today another person was murdered. So do they have to also post about that person? And if they don't decide to post about somebody, what makes somebody's death postable versus another one? And does that mean that every single person that, you know, dies, they have to now post about them? You know what I mean? It kind of opens a Pandora's box, because if you're going to support one person dying, like what makes you not want to support other people? You know what I mean?
Yeah. But at the same time, like with the water, what are they called? Straws.
The water things.
With straws, I mean, like you said, now it doesn't mean you're going to do everything else environmentally friendly, but you never know who it sparked interest in. Like maybe it sparked more environmentally conscious minds in other aspects of life. Mm-hmm. So like with the death of someone, you may post it, and it's not necessarily that you have to post every single person that dies. Mm-hmm. But I guess the hope is that you're informing other people of something they might not know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like hard to pick and choose like who's worthy of it.
And it's not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. Y'all are listening. Y'all are like, Justin, do you really have to complain about everything? I'm not complaining, but I'm just trying to pose a question, because it is like important to ask the question, like, what makes one person's life more important than the other? If you're going to post about one person, does that mean you have to post about all of them? And if you don't, does that mean you don't care? It's just a Pandora's box. So I think that, I guess, people have to be conscious of what they're doing, and you never know.
It like, also goes to like Breonna Taylor, though, because people like George Floyd kind of became the face of the Black Lives Matter movement, and people were like, well, this is just another example of Black women being underrepresented. And then there was the Black trans person, Tony McCade, was that it?
Yes.
Tony McCade, and he got even less representation. I think in that aspect, people were picking and choosing.
I don't know. I think there's a lot of reasons why, I guess, Breonna Taylor's death is getting overshadowed. First of all, there's no video for Breonna Taylor. With George Floyd, a lot of people that wanted to run from police brutality were forced to look at it. They were seeing how the video was circulating everywhere online, and they were forced to look at it and see how terrible that was.
Yeah, but isn't that all the more reason that Breonna Taylor should be getting more attention? Like, we shouldn't have to... Like, we should draw more attention to her case because it wasn't
video. We should, but I'm just pointing out the reason why her death isn't as publicized. You know what I mean? It's just because there's not a video out there showing how terrible that was. When you read about it, you're like, wow, this is a terrible thing. Somebody sleeping in their bed gets shot up by the police in the middle of the night. That's terrible. But if there was a video to, you know, support that, people would be even more outraged. And I think that that's just like an unfortunate situation. Nobody's death should be more covered than another. Anybody dying unjustly is a terrible thing. So I think that we just have to continue to do our part. The police officers that killed her still have not been prosecuted. Like, what's going on? But that's basically my off my chest. Doha, did you have anything to get off your chest this week?
Yeah, well, I did. But after that, I don't really want to talk about it.
That's fine. That happens sometimes. The next thing that we'll move on to in the news. So this week in the news, the Supreme Court has ruled that it is illegal to discriminate against workers on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity.
The stunning victory for LGBTQ Americans means that employers can no longer discriminate against workers simply because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. Until today, that was legal in more than half the states. Justice Neil Gorsuch, a Trump appointee who was joined by Chief Justice John Roberts and the court's four liberals in ruling that federal civil rights law must now be extended to LGBTQ workers, declared, "An employer who fires an individual merely for being gay or transgender defies the law." President Trump's reaction, subdued.
We live with the decision of the Supreme Court. Very powerful, a very powerful decision, actually. But they have so ruled.
So this is pretty monumental, because this is the first time like federal workplace protections have been put in place to and been extended to LGBT employees nationwide. And this is also interesting because the person that wrote the majority opinion on this case is Neil Gorsuch, who is the first Supreme Court justice that President Trump appointed. So obviously he's a big conservative, and for him to write the majority opinion on this is pretty monumental. So the reason why I brought up this story is because I think that it kind of gives me hope. It gives me hope that these Supreme Court justices aren't just people that are always going to agree with the president that appointed them. It shows that people actually have a conscience and people are human at the end of the day. And I'm thankful for that. And it makes me hopeful for other cases that get brought to them. Like, a lot of people are worried about reproductive rights and whether that would be taken away. But now that I've seen this and a lot of other cases, I think that when Roe v. Wade, if that gets, you know, brought up to the Supreme Court again, I think that it's going to stay in place. I don't know what your thoughts on the whole case and what your opinion on that is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very positive way of looking at it, that it gives people hope. But I mean, it comes soon after Trump signed that healthcare workers could refuse care to the LGBTQ plus community.
It gives me hope. So I think that these Supreme Court justices, they do have hearts at the end of the day. Interestingly, Kavanaugh voted against that. He voted against that, no surprise. But I don't know, the one of the more conservative justices voted in favor of extending workplace rights to LGBTQ people. So it's a big deal. Next thing, Doha, you brought up something about Band-Aids. What did you have to say about that?
Oh, well, it's kind of like, well, it was kind of like the fact that we're just now getting the anti-discrimination law in order for the LGBTQ plus community. A lot of people were happy about the Band-Aid thing by the Johnson & Johnson company.
The Band-Aid brand is diversifying its color palette. Parent company Johnson & Johnson says it will be rolling out new bandages in various skin tones. For years, advocates have been pushing for more diversity from the brand, which says the new product is intended to stand in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. Band-Aid says the new line will feature a range of tones from beige to dark brown.
But it's kind of like too little too late, you know? Like, okay, thanks for doing the bare minimum kind of thing.
Well, that just, it just shows that a lot of these corporations are fake. A lot of them are trying to capitalize on the whole Black Lives Matter movement. A lot of them don't care about Black lives. They care about Black dollars, you know? So It just shows that they'll do anything. They'll be on the right side of history when it comes to helping their bottom line only. And that goes with Pride Month. A lot of these people don't care about gay people, but they care about gay dollars. So they'll support it. They'll have rainbow margaritas at Starbucks or whatever they serve at that place. Anyway, but with the whole Band-Aid thing, I really never cared about the Band-Aid thing because Band-Aids to me were never like white. They were like dark beige. And that fits like a whole bunch of people. I never cared. I never was like, man, Band-Aids, they don't have any for Black people. Like, I don't care. Like,
I don't think anyone was crying about it. I think it's just the fact of how no one thought twice, you know, like white people kind of took it for granted kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And like in your case, you were just used to it at that point, but you shouldn't have had to get used to it. You shouldn't have to have taken George Floyd for that.
I never looked at a Band-Aid as, oh, this is Band-Aid is for like white colored skin or whatever. I never looked at it like that. I looked at it as a Band-Aid. That's it. I don't know if I was normalized into this system that this color is supposed to be the color that's neutral for everybody. I don't know if I was part of the problem in thinking that Band-Aids are just Band-Aids and they're not tied to a specific skin color. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the point of Band-Aids is to hide your scar or like to protect you, obviously, but I think the beige thing is because it was normalized for white people or set to the standard of white people.
Yeah. You also mentioned a story about Juneteenth. What did you have to say about that?
Oh, just that Trump was trying to hold a rally in Oklahoma on Juneteenth. And I saw on Twitter, it was like a trend to buy tickets for it. And it was like, oh, it'd be a shame if no one showed up and he ends up like in this empty stadium. But he apparently moved it to the 20th instead of Juneteenth.
Tonight, a rare reversal from President Trump after standing by his decision to hold a rally on Juneteenth, a date marking the end of slavery.
It wasn't done for that reason, but it's an interesting date, but it's a celebration.
The president now saying he's moving the rally back one day in observance of this important occasion and all that it represents. Acknowledging he received pushback from friends and supporters over the date and location. The arena in Tulsa, near the site of what is believed to be the single worst incident of racial violence in American history. White residents attacking Black residents and destroying their businesses 99 years ago.
So I was just wondering about all those people who bought tickets for the Trump rally on Juneteenth. And
that's interesting. You know, Trump and his supporters, they love him so much that they don't care that there's a pandemic going on. They will show up for his rally no matter what. And a lot of them were probably the ones protesting with their AK-47s and their guns, like, to open up the country. So they probably don't care about COVID in the first place. But I will say that he knew what he was doing when he, you know, scheduled that rally for Juneteenth, because Juneteenth is the day that Black people were freed from their shackles. So that's why that's so significant. And I think that he knew what he was doing by putting it on that date. But speaking of Juneteenth, I saw that a lot of big companies are now making Juneteenth a workplace holiday. Like, they're actually going to make that a holiday and give people paid vacation for that day. And I think that's a huge thing. And I think that Juneteenth should have been celebrated more.
Yeah, I agree. I wonder what they're going to do on July 4th, though.
You know, for July 4th, that's funny that you mentioned July 4th, because usually I never reveal my episode topics beforehand. But for July 4th, we're having an episode devoted to questioning what is white culture? Because 4th of July, America celebrates it, and we're supposed to celebrate our independence from Great Britain. But it's also a holiday, I guess, that a lot of white people celebrate. And I'm always like, what exactly are we celebrating when it comes to July 4th? So on that episode, I'm going to have another white guest. I don't know who it's going to be, but we're going to be discussing what exactly is white culture, because I do not know what it is. Is it hot dogs and pizza on 4th of July? Is it racism and guns? What is white culture? So,
well, I think by white in this case, you mean American white.
Yes, American white, because you are white, but I don't think you like have the same feelings about 4th of July that some of your other white
counterparts have. Anyone outside of America has different culture, obviously.
Yes, because I really want to know what is their culture, and we'll have a good discussion. It won't be ignorant, of course. It will really like open up the table to discuss their culture, because I was talking to American culture. There we go. Thank you, Doha. But I was talking to one of my friends of the show, and she was saying that she believes that we have a question about white culture because white people have spent so much time stealing and profiting off the backs of other people's culture that they really haven't like thought of what their own culture is. You know, with margaritas and Cinco de Mayo, they're always at the bars.
You love bringing up margaritas.
I know. Can y'all tell? There's a reason. But they love their going to, you know, Cinco de Mayo and going to the bars and getting margaritas. And for other holidays, they do the same. But what is their holiday and what is their culture? So we will devote an episode to that in the future. Stay tuned. So that was a little tease right there. So with that being said, it is time to get to our main topic. Doha, this is a controversial topic because I feel like people have an opinion about this, no matter how many ways you want to look at it. This week, Doha and I, we're talking about capital punishment in this country, crime and punishment. I guess, you know, what is justified when it comes to somebody committing a crime? Is prison for rehab or is prison for punishment? So the reason I wanted to do this episode is because with everything that happened with George Floyd, a lot of people proposed punishments that they wanted the police officer to go through, whether that be the death penalty, whether that be, you know, life in prison without the possibility of parole. People, you know, voiced their opinions on what they considered or what they want his punishment to be, basically. So I started thinking, as I always do, and I was like, what is the point of prison? Is prison supposed to be punishment or is prison supposed to be reform?
I don't think it's necessarily either. I mean, I'm against the death penalty, but we have things like capital punishment and we have rehabilitation centers. And I don't think that prison, I guess it is punishment, but it's unjust in many cases.
You think prison is unjust?
I think it's focusing on the wrong thing.
Well, the thing is, people say that prison is a form of rehab. People say that you go in and you're supposed to come out a better person. That's okay. What they say.
Who's they?
No, that's what people say. That's what they say the point of prison is.
A prison maybe it's is supposed to scare you to not doing any crimes. It doesn't stop crimes from occurring. For example, with death penalty in particular, just because we have it hasn't affected the rate of murder. Like, people are still murdering regardless of death penalty. If they want to murder, they're gonna do it regardless.
Right, but I don't think the death penalty is supposed to be like just to deter people from doing the same thing. It's to punish somebody for the crime that they committed.
But if they're going to murder someone, there's things worse than death.
Like what?
Like, I think solitary confinement could be worse. Plus, death, I mean, it's supposed to punish someone for the crime that they committed, but punishment to what avail? Who is the punishment for? It's just getting rid of your problem. It doesn't heal the family just because the person is dead always. Like, that doesn't offer closure. It's more expensive than the other option, which is a non-death penalty. It doesn't pay for therapy for the family of the victim. It doesn't pay for therapy for the family of the murderer. It doesn't.
I mean, but it's called criminal justice, though. You know, those other factors don't specifically deal with what the crime was and dealing with what to do with the person that committed that crime.
I think ideally it would be justice if it wasn't unjust in itself. There's no drop in murders because of the death penalty. And then if you want later, we can talk about how they execute death penalty. It's just so barbaric. And also, 48% of people on death row are Black. And I think typically what happens is people can't afford to get the help that they need, and so they end up on death row. Like, so many people have been wrongly convicted, and part of it is just, it goes back to like classism and rich people being able to afford to get away with the law, with breaking the law. So there's really like no benefit in it for anyone.
I mean, I don't think the death penalty is supposed to benefit anybody. It's supposed to be punishment for a crime being committed.
It doesn't fix the crime. Like, the person murdered is already gone. It is more expensive for people who are living. It doesn't offer...
How is it more expensive than keeping somebody alive for years using taxpayers' money?
It's like, if you look at it, it's not the first time I've heard it. Death penalty is more expensive because I assume because of things like the last meal, like the legal, like the paperwork, I don't know, but it's 70%
more. I don't know if I believe that stat, whoever came up with that stat.
Because no, it's not the first time I heard it. We'll look it up right now.
Keeping somebody alive, giving them meals, showers, everything.
I mean, you act like they're keeping them alive under the best circumstances.
It doesn't matter. They committed a crime, so why do they deserve to live in a mansion or whatever?
And is that what you think prison is?
No, but I mean, like, I hate this whole idea of wanting to coddle people that did heinous acts.
How is it coddling them, though?
It is.
I think death is an easy way out for them. I think solitary confinement is very cruel. I think death
but
penalty
they did a cruel thing,
cruel,
though.
But...
Like, why is this whole, like, oh, you committed a crime? Oh, the solitary confinement is just much too cruel. Like, what? They committed a crime. Why is there all this sympathy for somebody that did something really terrible?
You're the one who said death penalty is cruel. I'm saying solitary confinement is worse than death.
I don't know. Some people would beg to differ. I think somebody would rather be alive than to be dead. I think that's always better than death.
Well, the thing is, we can never really find out, can we?
I mean, we would have to poll the people in prison and what their thoughts on the death penalty are. But
there's no doubt that solitary confinement is like a cruel punishment itself.
Yeah, I'm not saying
the death
penalty
is expensive. So if the death penalty is expensive for those of us living and arguably a shortcut to a quick death for someone who did something bad, and that's like assuming everything, right? Like, you have to assume that they actually committed the crime. So I think it's not worth it at all because of the chance that they're innocent.
Yeah, I mean, that's when it comes to the death penalty, the only reason why I'm not strongly in favor of it is because of the fact that there is a chance that you could be innocent of a crime, sit on death row, and be executed for a crime that you didn't even commit.
And it's just very, like, eye for an eye. Like, it's so barbaric, really.
I mean, but you can apply that to anything, like... abortion, even. Somebody can make the argument that that's barbaric, that removing, you know, a fetus, whether you believe that's a life or not, is barbaric, that that's not natural. People can make that same argument.
I'll let you leave that for another episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like to talk about things that people don't talk about enough on this podcast, and I'm not afraid to discuss them because I feel like maybe some people think it, but they don't have like an outlet to either voice those things or hear people discussing it in an honest way. Yeah.
But in this case, we're on the same side. Like, we don't agree with the death penalty.
Yeah, but for different reasons. You say it's expensive. I need to look more into the stats.
Not just expensive. I mean, it's expensive. It doesn't drop murders happening, and it's unjust. People who can't afford to get a better lawyer are more likely to end up on death row. And it was already ruled unconstitutional. It was ruled unconstitutional not too many years ago. And what happened was it was ruled unconstitutional. And then people were pissed about that. And they were like, no, we need to have death penalty. And so the Supreme Court said, okay, you can have death penalty if it can be done humanely. Mm-hmm. So that's whenever we started doing the death by injection. And
okay, so let's ask this question. So... is prison supposed to be a way for them to learn from their mistakes, come out a better person, or is it supposed to be a place where they're punished? What is your opinion on that?
My opinion is that's focusing on the wrong thing. I think we should spend more money on preventing crimes in the first place.
Yeah, but crime is going to happen no matter how much you want to like prevent it. Crime is going to happen. Poverty
is
going to happen.
But the fact is that prisons... Have you seen the movie 13th?
I have.
All right, well, I was going to say, the fact is, like, prisons disproportionately affect Black people and people of color. Mm-hmm. And that's because not enough money is spent on solving why people commit crimes in the first place. Like, there's not enough resources to social workers. There's not enough access to jobs. There's not enough access to equal housing. And all these factors cause people to commit crimes most of the time.
Right. And I'm not doubting that. I watched the documentary too, and I think that it's like shameful that we don't, you know, devote enough resources to preventing crime in the first place. But like I said before, no matter how many resources are there to prevent crime, crime is still going to occur. So when a crime does occur, what do you do with the people that commit a crime? When they go to prison, is prison supposed to reform them or is it supposed to punish them?
I think reform.
So if prison is supposed to reform somebody, if somebody murders somebody, can they be reformed?
I don't know. I think those cases, you would need more of a psychiatrist's input, because obviously those are not normal circumstances whenever you murder someone. Like for us, we couldn't even hopefully fathom taking things to that level. But there are other factors to consider that we would be short-sighted on, and punishing them. Like I think it makes us feel like we're doing something just, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's just. Like, that's very much like what I said, eye for an eye. Like, how is what you're doing to someone else not punishment? How are you not creating more distress in the universe by punishing someone else? Like, who is it? Who are you to be punishing someone?
I mean, yeah, that's an interesting thing, because when it comes to the death penalty itself, like, who are any of us to, like, especially the people that are doing it, who is somebody else to take somebody else's life? You know what I mean? It's like, whenever you bring religion into it, it complicates things even further, because I guess based on whatever religion you follow, like, I guess taking somebody else's life is a terrible thing. Because if your thing is that it's rehab, then that means a rapist can be reformed, a murderer can be reformed, a domestic abuser can be reformed.
I mean, even in the cases of rape and stuff, a lot of times it can be linked back to the conditions that allowed them to believe it was okay. And like the rape culture that we have now, things like that can prevent them from occurring in the first place.
I mean, to some point, but if somebody wants to rape somebody, they're going to rape them regardless of the amount of resources there to stop that from happening. You know what I mean? If you want to steal, you will steal. It doesn't matter how many people say stealing is wrong. It doesn't matter.
But that's not the point. That's not the point. The point is, why do people steal? They feel like they need access. A lot of times,
no, some people steal because they want to.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you think that, but there's psychological things behind it. Like sometimes they want attention from their parents. Sometimes, like in the case of people from poor socioeconomic backgrounds, they feel the need to steal. So there's a lot more to it than meets the eye.
Well, that's not everybody though. There's people that know things are wrong and will do it just to
do it. I think in most cases, that is the reason. I think it's a lot smaller of a portion than we've been led to believe that would do it for the sake of doing it.
Right. And to go back to what I said before, like, even though there are things that can be done to deter people from getting into that situation in the first place, regardless, we know that that's going to happen regardless, that it'll still occur. And if we have those reforms,
but I think it would be so much smaller.
It'll be so much smaller, but you said smaller. You didn't say it would be eradicated. In those cases that murders and rapes happens, what do you do with those people?
We're circling. Okay, what would you do to those people?
Put them in prison, put them in solitary confinement, because certain people, they can't learn
from stuff like
that.
I think the idea of prison needs to be rethought out completely.
How? Okay, if prison is supposed to be rethought out, what is another solution to prison?
Black people and people of color at so much of a disadvantage. I, like I said, I haven't looked into it entirely, but I've been looking into it more so. And I think the idea of just punishing them, like, it's kind of out of sight, out of mind whenever you're just putting someone in prison.
Yeah, I know. It's like a short-term solution to a long-term issue, right? Kind of like beating your children. If you spank your children, like, that's a short-term solution to a long-term problem. Actually talking to your child and figuring out why they're acting out would be
a better solution. Oh, I know where I wanted to go. Well, psychology's actually proven that positive reinforcement works better than punishment. So
how do you use positive reinforcement for a murderer?
I don't have the solution.
I think certain people, you just can't, you know, reform. I think that taking the life of multiple people, being a serial rapist, those people are too far gone to be reformed.
I just feel like it's dangerous to have these talks before the core of it is handled. Like, you can have these talks all you want, but that's just the same conversations that people use to disproportionately affect Black people and people of color.
How so?
Like, that's exactly why people are like, abolish the police, who's going to stop crime? Point is that prisons and police disproportionately affect people of color. Like, so I feel like saying, oh, like, people are still going to do this, like, that's kind of after the fact.
I know, but it's kind of not after the fact, because there's no one size fits all when it comes to tackling crime or police brutality. Obviously, we know there are systems in place that disproportionately affect more people than other people. We know that that's true, but, you know, still we know that crime will happen even if you abolish the police. Still, we know that people will murder each other even if we have so many reforms set in place. No, it's true. Like, there's no... Joha, what reality are you living in? There is no way that murders will just never happen. Even in Canada, the country that people love so much, people get murdered there too.
Yeah, but the point is, prison would be a lot better with a lot less people in there. They're already overcrowded, and yeah, you can punish them in a prison. I'm not disagreeing that crime is gonna disappear off the face of the earth, but I don't think putting them in a prison solves anything.
But have you thought of any solutions besides prison? Because if not, we have
to go... I've said I don't know enough to have an opinion on what should happen, but...
Because if so, I was going to say that we need to just, you know, focus on the system that we do have, try and reform it the best we can, but still something needs to happen for the people that commit crimes. And I think that some people are too far gone when it comes to the things that they did to want to reform them.
People who are against prisons aren't so far off that they haven't thought of what to do with people who do commit crimes. But I will admit, like, I'm not knowledgeable enough on it to talk about it, if that makes sense.
Because if people out there, like, believe in this whole idea that you're supposed to come out a better person once you've been in prison, that you've already paid your debt to society, you know, if you believe in that, that means that these people should also, you know, regain their rights, their human rights, their rights as citizens of, you know, the United States. Should they be able to vote? You know, should they be able to, you know, get jobs just like the rest of us since they paid their debt to society? Because people that go to prison, you are stripped of your right to vote and you have a hard time finding work after you've been in prison. People don't want to hire you if you have a criminal record. If they've seen that you've had a stay or two in prison, they don't want to hire you. Should these people that get out, should they be able to gain those rights back? Or is their punishment being stripped of that?
Yeah, I would say that they should get their rights back. I think the idea of stripping them of their rights is another way to carry on white supremacy, because as we mentioned, it disproportionately affects Black people and people of color. And like, after they leave prison, it's like, what's the point?
Well, I think maybe, you know, for certain crimes that can be the case, but I think for murderers and rapists,
I don't think murderers and rapists are getting out there like
no
that.
They do. Some people commit murder and they don't get a life sentence.
There can be restrictions on it. You're saying overall most people who get out of prison are not the murderers and rapists.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
But you made me answer the question overall, and then you're like, well, what about murderers and rapists? Like, obviously there should be restrictions on it.
Okay, you're saying overall, once they go to prison, regardless of the crime, they should get their rights back. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Okay, what are you saying?
There should be restrictions on it.
What are those restrictions?
I don't know.
My personal thing is that on certain crimes, you should get your rights to vote back. I think specifically there's a lot of people that have gone to prison for like marijuana related things, which I think is stupid, and they lose their right to vote. And I think in cases like that, you should get your right to vote back. Murders and rapists, I don't think they should get the right to vote.
But if they're also like, that just goes back to like, if they're not getting the right to vote and participate, then why not just keep them in prison? Like, why are we letting them out if we don't think that they can get the right to vote? Like, what's the point of letting them out into the world if they can't
vote? To live, you cannot vote and still live and still go on and, you know, do other things. You know, voting is not, we don't just vote every single day. Like, there's more to life than just voting.
But we're taking them out of prison with the assumption that they're not going to murder again. Are we not? So it's like.
No, I don't think so. I think that they served their time.
So then why are we taking them out of prison?
Because they served their time. I'm not the one that came up with their sentence. Because then that means that everybody should go to prison for the same amount of time for the crime that they committed. If you murder somebody else, you should get a life sentence regardless of the circumstances relating to that crime. But I think that still my opinion will continue to be that murderers should not get the right to vote again. Because we're not releasing them with the whole thing that they're not a murderer again. You're still a murderer, and that is on their record forever. You know, that doesn't leave them. I think when it comes to taking the life of somebody else, there's no such thing as humane. Death and killing itself is just not a humane thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like a front to, it's like makes you feel better about what you're doing. But if you're going to do it, like, say, do it with your chest, you know, like, you can't lie to yourself.
And say, I mean, yeah, don't lie to yourself. But I guess with the society, because we call ourselves a civilized society, I guess it would be barbaric to stone somebody. I guess it would be barbaric to electric chair somebody. I don't know if that's even still legal in any states, but some people would say that it's illegal to do the firing squad thing that you brought up. So I think that out of all the possible ways to take somebody else's life, lethal injection is like the least controversial in a way. So I think that's why that's the system that a lot of people that support the death penalty have said is probably the best one to use when it comes to executing a prisoner.
I think most people who support the death penalty probably have ties with like white supremacy.
Really? Because two of my friends that said that they support the death penalty are black and they're not white supremacists.
I mean, like the people who actually have the power to keep it.
Oh, I mean, but it's interesting you say that because I looked at a map at all of the states that currently support the death penalty and currently still carry them out, and a lot of them are in southern states.
And then crazy. You mentioned the pro-life thing.
Yes, let's talk about it. So let's talk about it. So it's interesting. Thank you, Doha, for directing the conversation in this direction. When it comes to people that are pro-life, they believe that life begins at conception. So they care about life, right? But when it comes to somebody doing something wrong and punishing them for it, they are pro-death penalty, pro-taking somebody's life. So I think that's kind of hypocritical because if you're pro-life, you're pro-life in every regard. There's no excuses when it comes to taking somebody else's life. If you believe that, you know, abortion is taking somebody else's life, then you should be, you know, against the death penalty. Just because somebody did something wrong, I don't think that should justify you changing your beliefs for a certain instance. You know what I mean? And that's the issue that I get into with religion, because people pick and choose what they want to follow. The Bible says one thing, but people either don't listen to certain things or they only choose to follow certain things. So it's like, why do you get to pick and choose what you want to pick and choose? That doesn't make any sense. Doesn't that defeat the whole purpose of religion? If that's the case, then what's the point of following a religion in the first place if you're just picking and choosing what you want to follow and what you want to believe in?
Yeah, well, I haven't seen any stats of pro-life versus pro-death penalty, but considering I assume the South is more pro-life and is also clearly, as you mentioned, pro-death penalty. Yeah, well, I just don't think religion is fair to bring into either arguments because we're not a theocracy. You can't dictate anything religion-related when it comes to laws.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And that's why I'm so confused with all these people that are pro-life. Everybody is entitled to their beliefs. Don't get me wrong. I think that if you believe that life begins at conception, you're free to believe that. But there are also people in this country that don't ascribe to any religion. So why are you, you know, overshadowing their beliefs and their thought process just because you believe something else? This is, as Doha said, this is not a theocracy, and our government and religions should be separate. That's how I see it.
Yeah, that's all I think of anytime someone is like, but God, when it comes to pro-life, I'm like, you're losing me, because that's not relevant to the argument.
You know, because if we have freedom of religion in this country, you might disagree with abortion, but people are free to do whatever they want.
I mean, like, can you imagine if Muslims were like, can we ban pork? Like, it's against, like, yeah. There would be no question, yeah. You know?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You can't, you know, throw your religion onto somebody else. And that's the problem that I have with, you know, certain religious people that believe that they follow a certain set of guidelines, so everybody else should also do the same. This is not your country. Everybody is different from you. Some people are not religious. Some people are gay. You know, there's a lot of people that do not support LGBT people that are, you know, very Christian, but at the same time, you're not living their life. If you believe that they're going to go to hell, that's your belief, but you can't live their life for them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's also interesting because Trump is allowing the healthcare workers to refuse caring for people in the LGBTQ plus community on the basis of freedom of religion. Mm-hmm.
The Trump administration has rolled back Obama-era protections against sex discrimination in healthcare for transgender and non-binary Americans. The Department of Health and Human Services announced Friday it will enforce sex discrimination according to the plain meaning of the word sex as male or female and as determined by biology. This new interpretation prohibits discrimination complaints from people who don't identify with their biological sex or an exclusive gender. The decision came during LGBTQ Pride Month and was announced on the 4-year anniversary of the Pulse shooting in Orlando, Florida, where gunmen killed 49 patrons of a gay nightclub. This announcement was celebrated by conservative groups. Some charged Obama overstepping and reinterpreting gender. Others pushed for the change so doctors weren't forced to offer gender reassignment treatments counter to their religious beliefs.
But at the same time, whenever you have the freedom of religion, you have the freedom of everything. So you can't be denying someone because they have a different identity. I feel like it's...
That's silly.
Very backwards.
It is backwards, Doha, because if you have those strong beliefs like that where you can't serve certain people based on your religious beliefs, you probably shouldn't be a doctor or you probably shouldn't be working in healthcare in the first place.
Yeah, because the whole point is you should respect other people's beliefs.
That's the whole point. Y'all take a whole Hippocratic oath, do no harm or whatever. And y'all say that y'all serve everybody, that y'all administer health to everybody, not just people that believe what you believe. You know, that doesn't make any sense. So people that believe that just shouldn't work in healthcare because there's already enough discrimination in healthcare as it is. Black people, especially, you know, they believe that we just have a higher pain tolerance than everybody else. I think I read something that said like half of doctors working today think that black people have different pain tolerances than everybody else. That's ridiculous. We don't have some black gene that just makes us not feel pain. That's crazy.
Yeah. And that's even besides the point. People who, you know, like how there's conditions about feeling pain.
Yeah.
Like, you know how some people can't feel it? Those people actually are more likely to die sooner because they can't feel pain. Like, feeling pain has nothing to do with being in pain.
Right.
Well, that's a whole philosophical thing.
It is, because when you inject morality into anything, that's what complicates things even further. Yes, there's, you know, capital punishment. Yes, there's abortion. But when you inject morality into it, then it gets complicated because it's hard. If you believe one thing, if you're like a staunch Christian, I'll use that example, and you're against abortion, but you're a doctor, that gets complicated, you know, because you signed up for the job. But if your religion says that this is unlawful for you or whatever, like, how do you reconcile that?
I mean, with abortion in particular, people are going to do what they want to get the abortion. It'll just be less safe, but...
And then with morality, it's just like, yes, I believe that women have the choice to do whatever they want. But when you bring in morality into it, it's what point in the pregnancy is it right to terminate the pregnancy? 8 months? 7 months? We'll never get an answer, you know? If I did an episode about that, we'll never get an answer. It's like, you believe this, I believe that, and we can agree to disagree or we can agree.
Isn't that the point of your podcast? None of us are giving answers.
Yeah, we're just discussing because a lot of people don't discuss it enough or they don't get the opportunity to hear people having different takes and opinions when it comes to the various issues that we talked about on today's episode because it is hard. It is hard. If you're against prisons in general, what do you do for punishment? What do you do for the people that commit terrible crimes? If you don't believe prisons should exist, like, what's next? What's our new system?
Yeah, but exactly. Like, neither of us provided answers for that. We're just discussing, like, neither of us are experts. Yeah.
I'm not claiming to be an expert either, by the way. I know Doha already gave her.
Yeah, exactly. So you could do another episode on, and then, like, school systems.
Like, what about school systems?
That's a whole nother thing. Not just that, like, what we learn, like, the fact that we don't have these discussions normally. All the time you hear in school, you know, don't let history repeat itself, but the way they teach it is kind of like, here's what these other countries did, and painting the U.S. in, like, a patriotic manner. And,
honestly, there is. Maybe I can bring you back on a future topic when we're discussing all the things that we don't question enough growing up and in life in general when it comes to doing the pledge, pledging allegiance, you know?
Did you ever have to take social studies?
Yeah, of course.
Do you remember anything from social studies?
I mean, it's a long time ago. I feel like that's kind of a trick question in a way, because if you ask me, do I remember something from when I was like 4?
Well, yeah, like that's my point. I feel like school really failed us in so many aspects.
Well, we were learning a warped version of history. Also, yeah, I don't know if that's because we grew up in Texas. I don't know if that's because American history and whoever comes up with the textbooks is purposely telling us a false tale about what is true and what's not. Remember the whole idea of feasting and when we were in like first, second, and third grade, and we would have people would dress up as Indians and pilgrims, and we would like bring food and everybody would be like, yes, it's just like the pilgrims and the natives, and we would just eat.
My school did not do that.
We did that. We would call it a feast where everybody would bring food and stuff and we would just eat. It was like a party and people would dress as pilgrims and some people would dress as natives.
Oh shit.
I know. But yeah, if I ever do an episode about that, I'll have so much to talk about, because it's like crazy all the stuff that we normalize, but it's just not normal. Canada does not do a pledge of allegiance. That's weird. Like holding your hand over your heart and everybody in this monotone voice, I pledge allegiance to the flag.
And the thing is like, you could so easily make some kind of propaganda and like show us as like some other foreign country pledging allegiance. And we as Americans would look at that and be like, whoa, they're crazy.
Yeah. And all these people that love and like worship the flag so much, they probably need to check themselves too, because why is it that you worship a piece of cloth, really? And I get that it's a symbol, that it represents people that have fought for the country and stuff, but it's like, to have that much reverence for something, it's kind of like, you have to question it, you know? And that's what I always say, you guys, we don't ask enough questions as a society. So many things, we just think that it's normal without giving it a second thought. Ask yourself, why is it that we do a pledge of allegiance? Ask yourself, why is it that the death penalty exists? What is its purpose, you know? Ask yourself all these questions, because when you ask yourself questions, you get enlightened and you have a new sense of understanding that you didn't have prior. Whether that's the religion that you follow, ask questions. Whether that's what your parents have said to you growing up, ask questions. Whether that's the political party that you support, ask questions, you know? And have conversations with people. That's what I love about doing this show. Because Doha brought up things that I never thought about. And hopefully I brought up stuff that she's never thought about either. But the point is, have those conversations no matter how uncomfortable they are. And maybe you'll have a new sense of understanding after the fact. Yeah. Did you have anything else to add?
Yeah. But also look things up.
Yes. Look things up.
Conversations can be misleading.
Yes.
Also, my favorite thing to do is reading comments. I don't think enough people read comments.
Okay, what's your reasoning behind reading comments?
It's like listening, but on social media. You know, like sometimes, like for example, the cops protesting and like kneeling with people, on the surface, that can look really great. You know, you're like, oh yeah, how cute. Like cops are kneeling. And then you read the comments and like you know, it's kind of like a fact check almost. Right. It offers new perspectives. It's not a fact check, but it offers new perspectives, new ways of thinking of things. And then you can look more, like it offers questions you wouldn't have even thought to ask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because not everything is what it seems. A picture on Instagram tells 1,000 words, and those 1,000 words are in the comments. So when you look at comments, you're like, oh, I never thought of that. And you learn, you know? A lot of people don't read enough. We look at a headline, we look at a picture, and we form opinions on stuff that is not fully formed, you know what I mean? And that's the problem with today, is that we're so caught up on things that we shouldn't be. We don't read the fine print. We don't read at all. Like, I barely know any people that are my friends that read books, novels, just casually. Like, nobody reads anymore, and it's sad. Like, I read. Y'all know that. I might start a book club for the podcast. 5 people will join, but people don't read enough. And I love that what Doha said, because I also read comments as well. And I think people don't do that enough, because you actually learn, and you might be against something, but by reading somebody else's comments, you see the world through their eyes, through their lens for a second, without just listening to your toxic bubble of people that think the same way you do.
Yeah, exactly. Because things might be retweeted or shared because they're geared towards your audience, but then you read comments and comments aren't filtered like that. So
yeah.
To end on a more positive note,
yes,
I have a little promo to give.
All right.
Adrian Burel. He is a Texas ex, and he started something really cool. He was featured in ID Magazine. He was featured in the George Washington Carver Museum in Austin.
Wow.
And he started a capstone project that turned into something much greater, and it's called the Black Yearbook. So he's sort of highlighting the fact that at UT Austin, 49,000 students, out of 49,000 students, 4% are Black. And from that, like 1.7% are Black men. And there's just been a plateau of Black students at UT Austin.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously with a project this big, he needs help with funding. And yeah, it's just something I support because I think it's really cool. And it's important to hear the voices of the Black community at a predominantly white institution.
Right.
So there's a link to this GoFundMe on Instagram. And
I will also put a link in the description.
Awesome. Thank you. And he has a website. He's just really interesting. He's like someone to look out for. I think he's going to do big things. So yeah, his name is spelled a little differently, but you'll have it clarified in the description.
I sure will. Yeah. And I think during this time, it's also important to just highlight, you know, creators of color, you know, Black creators, people that are doing it for the culture and that don't get enough shine on their own. So I think that I love that during this time, a lot of people are shouting out their local Black businesses, whether that's restaurants, coffee shops, whatever, artists,
podcasters,
you know, shout out the podcast, share it with your friends, all of that good stuff. During this time, just share, you know, a fellow Black creative, share all the Black businesses out there because we all deserve to be seen. Doha, thank you for joining me this week.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Doha brought some interesting conversation, interesting takes, as expected, but I'm glad that you joined me on this episode. So you guys, I hope you enjoyed the episode. Definitely some interesting perspectives. I wonder what side of the line you fall on when it comes to capital punishment, the death penalty, reforms that need to be made when it comes to criminal justice. Y'all, let me know your thoughts. So as always, continue to share the podcast. If you're listening on Spotify, hit the following button. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, hit the subscribe button. We love to see it, and I appreciate all of the support. So with that being said, y'all continue to be safe. Wear your mask, wash your hands, all of that good stuff, because Corona is still out there. So until next time, I will catch you guys on the next one. Y'all have a good rest of your week.